You're listening to the Bottom Line podcast, where those living with or beyond bowel cancer, as well as health professionals involved in bowel cancer treatment and care, share their inspirational stories and lived experiences with host and bowel cancer survivor, Stephanie.
Today's podcast is centered around support. Everyone affected by bowel cancer deserves to access a dedicated bowel cancer nurse and support services. This dry July, we speak with two loved ones who were impacted by the disease and are now helping to raise much-needed funds for Bowel Cancer Australia so they can continue to expand the Specialist Bowel Care Nurses program and more patients can receive support from an in-person bowel care nurse. Megan and Kayla, thank you so much for joining me today on the Bottom Line podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's so lovely to see you both, even though it's around quite tragic circumstances, and I'm going to come to that in a moment. You are loved ones and you have both lost somebody to bowel cancer, early onset bowel cancer. Megan, I'm going to start with you. You lost your husband only last year. Talk us through how he was diagnosed.
Yeah, so Brendan was diagnosed December 2023. That was just a month after his 40th birthday. He didn't really have too many symptoms leading up to that diagnosis. It kind of all came to a point when he really had quite a lethargic feeling for somebody who was quite fit and active. Just being able to go for a walk to the shops was becoming a little bit more difficult. So he went to his doctor, they took bloods, and of course it came back as anemia, iron deficiency. And then we presented to the ED with some pain that he had on his right side, and then that's when he was sent for a colonoscopy and they found the tumour in his bowel. Further tests and scans showed that it had metastasized to his liver. The first round of chemotherapy went quite well. He responded really well to that, and they got to a point where in May of 2024 he was able to have a liver resection. They took a third of his liver at that time. He then was able, in August of 2024, he had a bowel resection where they took two-thirds of his bowel out.
Oh, they did the liver resection before they did the bowel resection?
They did. Yes, yeah, the chemotherapy had been successful in killing the tumour that he had in his bowel, so the priority was to save the liver as best that they could. And then he had a second round of chemotherapy, which wasn't as successful after the surgeries. And in March of 2025, we found that the tumour had spread to his back. And we were then placed on waiting lists for clinical trials. Unfortunately, for numerous reasons, he wasn't eligible for a couple of different trials.
Hard to navigate the old clinical trial area, isn't it?
Yeah, different world, and you've got to be in that set criteria to be able to be eligible. Unfortunately for Brendan, that wasn't an option in the end. The cancer had spread further into his lungs. And then, yeah, sadly, he passed away July last year.
Megan, with his fatigue, did the GP think that there was any further investigation needed or just said, oh, no, it's iron, you're anemic, we'll give you more iron?
Yeah, pretty much. Initially they thought it might have been a stomach ulcer. Cancer was never floated as an idea, I guess. Perhaps that's from a standpoint of, you know, not wanting to freak everybody out at that stage. I know that when we went to the ED, that they mentioned it. They said, you know, but they said it from a point of view, is there a family history of bowel cancer in your family?
That's good that they did.
Yes, which, you know, we didn't know at that time, but now with further investigation, Brendan did have a significant history of bowel cancer in his family that we didn't know about.
Wow.
At the time. His grandfather also died of bowel cancer when he was 41 in 1967, which we didn't know at the time. So, yeah, initially it wasn't floated that would be it, because the symptoms are so typical of other things as well.
Absolutely. They could have been a whole range of things. But we like to say at Bowel Cancer Australia that if you are having these symptoms, then have them investigated. Because obviously Brendan was, you know, he's very young, and we now know that fit, healthy people are diagnosed with bowel cancer as well. It's not an old man or old person's disease, is it?
No, it's not. And it's, I guess, in hindsight, he was probably, you know, feeling a bit bloated, but we just put that down to getting older, something you ate, you don't really think about it too much. But then when you go back and you try to, you know, think about all of the things leading up to that, then that was probably the biggest symptoms that he had, I guess.
So tragic at such a young age. Kayla, you lost your brother, Brad.
Yes.
And he was also very young. He passed away at the age of 38. Talk us through his diagnosis and how that affected you.
Yeah, so he was diagnosed, I've just had my 5-year follow-up colonoscopy for myself, so 5 years ago in the March. His son was 8 days old at the time, and his bowel perforated. So he was having symptoms, but he wasn't concerned about himself with a heavily pregnant wife and things like that, and just pushed them aside, unfortunately. Couldn't get an ambulance to come to the house and stuff either. So my dad actually had to drive and get him and take him to the hospital. And yeah, he was taken there. Same sort of a thing, like not really any concern about bowel cancer or cancer related. We're only talking about it the other day, and he was basically told that he's too young. And I have the exact quote from my sister-in-law. She's actually said, I've just got it here. Like, we can see a mass, but I wouldn't be worried. He's too young, fit and healthy for it to be anything sinister.
Tragically, I hear that all the time.
Yeah, it was then not long after that, obviously, that they did get the diagnosis, and that's where his journey started. Luckily, we had a bit longer with Brad, you know, over the years, but it was not great quality, being on chemo every fortnight and things like that. He was usually very unwell throughout all of it. And at the same time, it was COVID. So it was, you know, like, don't go near people because you're sick. Don't do this, don't do that, you know. So it was a lot of FaceTime calls and, you know, catch ups online more than actually in person. And that sort of continued on anyway, because we're just in that mindset of, like, don't get Brad sick.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, that carried on it well after COVID finished as well. That was always just trying to put his health first. And, you know, young kids myself, you know, you're always sick. So
yes,
that was his. But yeah, he passed away in November 2024 after, like I said, it's been, what, 4-5 years now. So four and a half years of fighting it. Lots of surgeries, lots of chemo, lots of everything. He did manage to get into a clinical trial. At the end of his journey, there was essentially nothing more that they could do. And he did fit very luckily into that tiny category that you've mentioned. And he was in Sydney for, I feel like, a month. I'm not sure. There was back and forth at times, but he did have to stay down there for a period of time. Looked like it went really well, but at the end it then metastasized. And unfortunately, yeah, he passed at 38.
Which is way, way too young.
So young.
I'll go to you, Megan. How did you get through that, and how did it impact you?
I guess the impact has been profound. It was just, gives us a little bit of other insight, is that Brendan and I lost a very dear friend to bowel cancer 7 years ago when she was 39. So it was, once again, it was just a little bit like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe this is happening again. Mm. The diagnosis was just a kick in the guts, really. We'd come off this wonderful year of both turning 40. We celebrated 10 years of being married. We had this great year, and then December 7th, 2023 just put such an end to that. It's very difficult. I think as a person, as a partner, you just want to try and help the person who's going through the cancer more than anything.
Absolutely.
You know, it's trying to be positive is the biggest thing.
Mm.
Just trying to stay positive, just trying to do what you can. And that's the hard part.
And the self-care and being kind to yourself as well, because I think that's what happens. I looked after my mum when I was young, and you do put yourself last, don't you, Megan?
Yeah, you tend to do that. Brendan was wonderful, though. Like, he was just the most positive person throughout the whole thing, and that in turn helped me to help him. He never complained. He never said, why me? You just go through the steps. You go, okay, done the first rounds of chemo. What's next? Oh, okay, surgery's coming up. Okay, let's get through the surgery. Then what's next after that?
You do become process-driven and step-by-step and live in the present moment, which I think is important.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you start to find joy in the small things in life, you know, dipping your toes in the ocean, going for walks in nature, all of those kinds of things. And it affects every part of your life. You know, it's you're having to take significant time away from work, you know, significant, profound effects, yeah.
Yes, and Kayla, for you, losing your brother?
Yeah, I guess like it's similar, but obviously different relationship style thing. Like I wasn't living it day in, day out. Probably didn't necessarily really see him deteriorating as much as he was.
Yes, and I was talking about this with someone the other day. I lost my mum to ovarian cancer 30 plus years ago, 35 I think it is, and the grief is not lessened. You just learn to live with it. You're both in very, very early stages, but that place in your heart for that person that you've lost will never be diminished, will it?
No,
absolutely not, no.
And I find it's not helpful when people say, oh, it'll be fine, you'll learn to cope, or, you know, it'll lessen with time.
Or that it gets easier.
It gets easier. That's the line. Yeah. That's the line.
Mm. It doesn't.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. There's not a day goes by that I don't think of my mum, but I've just had to learn to live with it.
Yeah.
Which brings me to the reason that you are both obviously doing Dry July. You're doing it for Bowel Cancer Australia and the in-person support services. Before we go to what you're going to do for Dry July, I'm going to ask, Megan, did you and your husband access the support services and how did that help you?
Bowel Cancer Australia were in touch pretty much from the get-go, contacting Brendan. The biggest support he had was he was in contact with a dietitian at Bowel Cancer Australia quite regularly. I think she checked in every 2 or 3 weeks, and that was really helpful for him, just getting tips on what to, you know, how to look after himself, but also just very much that support after his surgeries, what he could be doing to help his recovery. They're also on board with offering counselling services, not only to Brendan, but also to myself. And they would check in fairly regularly to see how I was going as well. Because we live in a fairly rural area. The surgeries took place up in Canberra. And I know that Bowel Cancer Australia were touching base after surgeries there. I'm pretty sure somebody came in to see him just to kind of make the transition back home easier for him. So, yeah, no, the support had been great.
Support services are so important and, you know, everyone should have access to a bowel care nurse, be it regional or city, and you've just touched on that regional piece, Megan, and I think that is so very important. And there's nuances around having a bowel cancer diagnosis and surgery, as you've just touched on, food, stomas, neuropathy, that can continue for many, many years, which takes me to Dry July, which you are both raising funds for. I'll go to you, Kayla. You are the fizz-free friends, is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So it probably doesn't sound necessarily too good, but over the years, I'm not a heavy drinker. It has probably increased over the past 18 months, I will say that.
That's okay. No judgment here.
I'm more of a soft drink person than an alcohol person. So I do give that up 100% for the whole month. And that's just me making sure that I give up something, because for me to say I give up alcohol, that easy, right? You know, I'm not having that. But yeah, for me to go and out of my way to have to make that conscious decision, no, I can't, you know, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing, you know, it's giving up something is, I think, the point of it, because a lot of treatment and stuff like that is they give up everything. Like they don't have a choice. I have to make the choice to do that. And so, yeah, but I did see a lady last year put up a thing, and every so often of money she raised, she'd give up something extra. I haven't looked at it yet, but I'm thinking of doing something like that. It was, yeah, if she got to like $200, it was like soft drink or something. And then $300, it was like biscuits or chips or chocolate or just all these extra little things that we just take for granted and that are easily able to just snack on or a little treat, that giving up those extra little things just makes the sacrifice mean a little bit more.
And why is it important to you to do Dry July?
So it's obviously to raise money. There needs to be support. People can't get through this without support, and they shouldn't have to. So any money that I can raise towards this is just in his memory.
Lovely. Well, I look forward to seeing how you go in Dry July. And
yes,
for me, it's chocolate. So yeah, I have to give up chocolate because I'm a little bit the same. Since my cancer diagnosis, I don't drink a lot of alcohol. Makes me feel all queasy and nauseous, like I was on chemo. yes, not fabulous. That's not to say that I don't have a beverage here and there. Megan, and for you, what are you doing around Dry July?
Giving up alcohol for the month of July. Got a group of friends together who are doing it with me. For me, again, it's my way of, raising money and giving back to Bowel Cancer Australia in thanks for all the support that they have given us and continue to give me, you know, in the last 12 months. Just that bowel care nurses, it's just so important to have. And I mean, if we can, you know, expand it and, you know, every hospital, especially those rural hospitals, can have one, I think that would be fantastic. And I think that's, you know, that drives me to be able to say, oh, well, we did something to help to try and make a difference, even if it's just something small.
Lots of something smalls make something big.
Correct.
We're very grateful for every single dollar that we receive because we are a community-funded charity. And without the help of the likes of yourself, Megan and Kayla, we wouldn't be able to do what we do and, you know, expand those in-person nurse services, which is so important. Before we go on to the two questions that I'm going to ask, looking back and in reflection, what is it that you would like people to know about bowel cancer? Kayla, I'll go to you first.
Yeah, I think we've covered it quite a few times, but it's not only an old person's disease. And like you mentioned before, like the symptoms are just so varying. Like if people think something's wrong, they just need to check and keep pushing for answers until they're satisfied with it, because you can just get brushed off so easily. And that's, you know, I feel like that's happening more and more, which is unsettling.
And obviously you've had your colonoscopies.
Yeah.
And you're on it. You are, you know, making sure that you have surveillance.
Yeah. So we had no family history at all until Brad. Brad was the first one in our family to get it. We all, at the time, my immediate family, all within the 6 months essentially of his diagnosis, or got our first test done. And then I'm not sure about the rest of them, but mine was like come back in 5 years. So yeah, I've just had my 5 year follow up and it's the same again. I've just got to go back in 5 years. But it's not nice to have to do it. Like the preparation in order to go and have a colonoscopy is not fun. Like there's no sugarcoating what you have to go through for that. But I think it was 36 hours without food and the prep. Like for that amount of time to go through that, to get results, to get checked, is absolutely nothing compared to what it would be to go through chemo and surgeries and all of that. It's just, there's no point. Like I don't see any reason to delay doing simple tests like that, as uncomfortable as it can be for a short amount of time. There's just no reason to delay them.
No, 100%. I couldn't have said it better myself. And Megan, for you, what would you like people to know about bowel cancer?
Yeah, the early diagnosis. We know that you know, early diagnosis leads to better outcomes. I would say to people, with the bowel screening being lowered to 45, which is absolutely fantastic, but that's for the free bowel kit. You know, you can buy the kit yourself. So if you're under 45, I think it's $20 or $30.
Go to bowelcanceraustralia.org. Little plug in there.
And buy the test. It doesn't stop there. If you're still not feeling great in yourself, you know your body, advocate for yourself. And if you need a second opinion, then, you know, do that.
Because the reality is both Brad and Brendan would not have been captured with the National Bowel Cancer Screening Program. They were both well under 45.
Yeah, that's
but,
right.
But absolutely, continue to advocate is very important. I'm about to wrap up. We are very appreciative for you raising funds for Bowel Cancer and for Dry July, and we wish you all the best. I will try and give up chocolate. I'll try. It is my little nemesis. But before we do, I always ask the people that I interview two key points that they want to take from today's podcast. Megan, I'll go to you first. What would your two be?
I guess the biggest one for me is that you're not alone. For people who are going through cancer themselves or somebody who's supporting somebody with cancer, you're not alone. Lean into the supports that are available, whether that's through Bowel Cancer Australia, the hospital. I've been really lucky. I've found a really good, great online community, like people that I've contacted through social media and, you know, being able to talk to people who are going through exactly the same thing as what we were going through has really helped. So cancer diagnosis can be quite isolating, but yeah, just to know that you aren't alone and that there are people who are going through exactly the same thing and they can be a great support.
Fantastic. I think that's finding your tribe. We hear that all the time is really important. Was there anything else?
I think the other thing that I'd been thinking about was that, you know, is just when going through that time, touched on it a little bit before, is that staying positive is quite powerful. I know it's easier said than done many times, and things do get hard, especially around surgeries. And if you're getting news that it's not ideal, but staying positive, looking after your physical and mental health, it really does go a long way to making the journey a little easier at times, I guess.
Great advice, Megan. Great advice. And Kayla, your two points?
I guess, like I just touched on before about downplaying symptoms, it's not worth it. And then also, like, I guess keeping communication out there like we're doing now, advocating for those types of things and just keeping conversations like this at the surface and not burying symptoms and burying conversations because they're a bit taboo and you don't want to talk about them. Again, there's no point. It's no benefit of anyone to not talk about things.
Wonderful, wonderful tips. Kayla and Megan, thank you so much.